You're listening to Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Weisop. Today we're calling the boys, running a train. The train got derailed in East Palestine, Ohio, and we're here to talk about it today. That's right. Today's show is going to be a very special episode. First, we're going to talk about this incident, if you haven't heard about it, because the mainstream media seems to be a little quiet about it. We're going to talk about these toxic chemicals unleashed in Ohio, the arrest of a journalist. Then we're going to bring in a very special guest. He's the returning champ. I had him on just a couple months ago, but he's back. And his name is Nick Hinton. You know him, you love him. And he's going to join us to talk about predictive programming in films and the global occult connection. We're going to talk about why this matters on a higher cosmological, spiritual level. And we get into all kinds of stuff. We're going to talk about this mix of what's happening in the world right now because it's crazy. We got UFOs crashing. We got UFOs getting blasted from the skies. We got movies showing us predictive programming of train crashes. And he and I, we're gonna chop it up. We're going to talk predictive programming from films such as White Noise, which he's got some crazy information about that. Because you're not going to believe, you know, plot spoiler, but when Nick gets on, he's going to tell us about how this film, White Noise, on Netflix, was actually filmed in East Palestine, Ohio, with people from the town. So they already experienced it in the movie, now they're living it out. And we'll talk about how that fits into the UFO agenda. We'll talk about Super 8. We'll talk about Jordan Peele's films, Us and Nope. And this, and you know, this kind of discussion leads into the digital matrix, which is what he's going to talk to us about, the actual real one they're building. And then at the end of the conversation, you know, I like to play devil's advocate. I'm not just a blind truther. Sometimes I question the truther perspective. And we take a look at maybe, just maybe, us truthers are assisting in these occult psychopaths creating this digital matrix and shoving us all in it like a bunch of sheep. Are we participating in revelation of the method? And if we are, should we? We're going to talk about it. So without, and you know, things are nuts, right? A testament to how nuts things are, I have been researching and reading and compiling notes on The Wizard of Oz. I got 3 episodes. It's a mega deep dive on Wizard of Oz. Of course, I wanted to drop it as part 1, 2, and 3, week to week to week. But as you can tell, that's not happening right now. We've got devil worshiping at the Grammys and Rihanna Illuminate confirming at the Super Bowl. And we're gonna come back to the Super Bowl because I also got a big mega TMZ show we're going to do. We're going to talk about how the video cameras at the Super Bowl on the TV cut away precisely at the only moment in which Rihanna threw up the Triangle of Manifestation. If you saw it on my Instagram, I posted it. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. They knew what they were doing. But anyway, part 3 of Wizard of Oz is going to be out next week, barring any other insane-o things that could possibly happen. Knock on wood. I promise you it's happening. Oh, man. So, anyway, without further ado, let's get into it. What happened in Ohio? You know, a lot of people hate Ohio. I love Ohio. I think it's a great place. I went up to me and some friends and my wife went there years ago to Sandusky and Columbus. Great little town. Got kicked out of a bar because I'm so cool. I was dancing on top of a table like I was a chicken coyote ugly, and I thought it was adorable, and they did not, all right? Because that was back when Four Locos had the lethal combination of alcohol and caffeine, all right? Anyway, okay, moving on. I'm now a Christian soldier, though. I don't drink like that. I don't drink like that. Not that you have to be a Christian soldier to not drink Four Loko. I still drink them. Now, this train derails in East Palestine, Ohio, which, let's talk about how bizarre the naming of this. Like, for instance, a month ago, we talked about the serial killer up in Moscow, Idaho. Moscow, Idaho. Who even knew these towns existed? And now it's Palestine, Ohio. Bizarre. Bizarre. And Nick's going to talk a little bit about the Palestinian connection there when we get him in here. But anyways, this train crashes, as you probably already know, unleashes toxic chemicals. The main culprit that they always talk about is the vinyl chloride. What is that? It's what they use to make a bunch of plastic tchotchkes, which is the bane of my existence. I hate this. I hate it so much. If you listen to, this is where I get OG Granola Wokester on you, right? You're going to get super OG Granola Woke today, my friends. If you listen to my other show I do called Breaking Social Norms with my wife, Josie, we did, I believe it was a Christmas episode. I don't remember. We talked about how stockings are such a waste because you fill it with all this plastic candy crap. Like M&M's makes this candy cane. There's like five M&M minis in it. And it's like, cool, that's going to just be here forever. It's never going to biodegrade. I hope that was worth it for nothing. Nobody cares. Go back to shoving an orange in the sock, in the stocking. Hit these spoiled brats over the head with it. I don't know. No, don't do that. Sorry, I'm still on ultra high T Isaac mode. I don't know if you know that. The last couple episodes, I've been very aggressive. Anyway, so I don't know if there's anything dumber that could happen to this country, but yes, the crap they use to make, and I'm just using this as an example. I have no idea what the actual destination was for this chemical. But it was probably on its way to the M&M factory for Christmas tchotchkes. And now a bunch of animals have to die and people can't drink the water. And people probably got cancer now. Anyway, some people are calling it the Ohio Chernobyl. Are they being excessive? Are they being extra? I don't know. I don't know. But on February 3rd, this happened. Which, as of this recording, which is on February 16th, that's damn 2 weeks ago. And the officials in the town did an evacuation order for everyone within 1 or 2 miles of it. Then the company that owned the train, Norfolk Southern, on February 6th, they did this controlled burn to release the vinyl chloride into the air because I guess there were some worries that it was going to explode, which would have been even worse. So now, and you can see photos of this plume of black smoke going up, and up in the skies, a massive black cloud. And now they got a bunch of acid rain, and the air quality is garbage. People's throats are screwed up, and animals and chickens are dying up to 100 miles away. 100 miles away, animals are dying. Thousands of fish dead. But the officials in Ohio assert there's no proof, there's no causality that this is from this insane toxic chemical blowing up.
Okay.
It's gaslighting at its finest, I think. I believe. If you've ever seen the Aaron Brockovich movie, this is kind of what it's about. It's about these company. I mean, look, and I'm going to get on my soapbox after Nick joins us. And Nick does not endorse any of my opinions on this show. I don't know what he believes on this type of matters. So he is not endorsing any of Isaac's opinions today, all right? Now, a journalist, and this is where I first heard of this, on February 4th or 5th or something like that, I saw a TikTok of a journalist getting arrested. And Josie, you know, she sends me TikToks, and she's like, is this real? And I'm like, I don't know. I never heard of it. What happened? A train wrecked? I don't know. And I looked and I watched the video. It sure looks like they're just arresting this journalist guy. And if you look it up, Newsweek says it's a misleading video. Really? Okay. I'm going to read you from Newsweek. It says, the claim that he was arrested for reporting the truth, viewed on its own, is misleading. While Lambert was removed from the venue and arrested, the clip shared by Green, viewed alone, does not provide all the facts. Oh, tell me more. As noted by News Nation, Lambert was in a room full of other journalists doing their job, so there is little likelihood that police or officials were trying to prevent the truth from being reported. They're claiming that there was a lot of journalists reporting on this, but I'm here to tell you, folks, This train thing was not a hot topic on the news. Regardless of one's views of the incident, the footage shared by Green editorializes the facts. Fitted in among other claims about underreporting of the Ohio derailment story, it may create the impression of a more conspiratorial plot. News Nation has defended its reporter, with its Washington bureau chief Mike Vicaria telling the channel's On Balance host Leland Vittert on Wednesday that Lambert behaved professionally while being manhandled. He added that Lambert was talking very quietly to the camera and reporting on a very critical story of interest to the public.
All right.
So this journalist gets arrested, and the claim is that he was like trespassing or doing some stuff he shouldn't have done. Do you believe that? Or do you think there's a scramble to cover up Chernobyl, just like you saw? And look, I didn't read no books about Chernobyl, but I did watch a whole show on HBO, and this is exactly what happens, man. You get scientists and politicians and corporations, and you get all these financial motives enmeshed with things and power-hungry people, and bad things happen. They want to cover things up. They want to downplay events. Then later, when it gets out and people find out how horrific things are, then it's like the blame game of, well, it wasn't me, you know, and that's what's probably going to happen here. Then, yesterday, I'm going to read you from Newsweek. Speaking to a local news channel, WKBN, Sil Caggiano is a former fire department battalion chief in Youngstown, Ohio, and hazmat technician for 21 years. And he said, "We basically nuked a town with chemicals so we could get a railroad open. I was surprised when they quickly told the people they can go back home, but then said if they feel like they want their homes tested, they can have them tested. I would have far rather they did all the testing." And the idea here is that between the government on different levels and the train corporation, they're rushing people back into their homes and saying, "Hey, everything's fine. It's good. Get back in there." Because they're trying to minimize the damage and collateral damage that's going to happen from this. And I read that they treated the chemical with some other chemical. I'm going to talk to you about it later on. Some people were talking about like chemtrails. They were using chemtrail clouds to sort of do this stuff in. I mean, these people are living in a chemical warfare zone, basically. And anyway, let's talk about the predictive program. I'm going to set you up for a longer conversation I had with Nick, all right? And he goes into more detail on all these things. The predictive programming is odd, all right? And I'll have a rational sort of reason for that after Nick. You know, you have this Netflix film, White Noise. I tried so hard to watch this. I really wanted to. I liked the trailer a lot. I think Adam Driver's a pretty interesting actor. And I hated it so much. It reminded me of a Wes Anderson film, and then I researched it just for this show that I'm doing right now and found out that the director, Noah Baumbach, actually collaborates with Wes Anderson. So there you go. It's like a Wes Anderson movie. It's pretentious and, I don't know, just not my cup of tea, right? I know some people love Wes Anderson movies. That is not me. And look, I love David Bowie. And I love Bill Murray. I still can't take it. I can't do it. Then, let's see here. But yeah, in the movie White Noise, this happens. A train accident in Ohio happens and unleashes deadly toxins and forces evacuations, just like in real life. Some other toxic Avenger. Remember that? There's a janitor who turns into a monster after being exposed to toxins. Return of the Living Dead in the 80s was about this toxic gas getting released and turning people into zombies. I believe Resident Evil is on par with these kinds of things. And Super 8, of course, which I believe is Spielberg, is it not? And shout out to Nick. He's the one who hit me up about this, and that's what started our conversation. I said, man, why don't you just get on the show and explain it to me? Explain it to me like I'm five. But I actually forgot about this movie. It's been so long since I've seen it. And I'm going to read you the plot. It's about a group of young teenagers in 1979 who are filming their own Super 8 movie when a train derails, releasing a dangerous presence into their town. The film was shot in West Virginia and surrounding areas, portraying the fictional town of Lillian, Ohio. Man, these Illuminate confirms hate Ohio so hard. So they couldn't even change the fictional location. They're like, nah, it's going to be Ohio. So there you go. Ohio's destined to have train wrecks and aliens, I guess. And isn't that where they took the Roswell crash stuff? They took it to Wright-Patterson in Ohio. Something going on there. If you read Peter Lavenda's Sinister Forces books, he talks about different areas around there, West Virginia, Kentucky, and I think Ohio is included in there, if I'm not mistaken. It's been a while since I read it, as being sinister places. Places that the Native Americans and other folks thought there was, I don't know, vortexes, portals, what have you. But in the film, Super 8, it says, the film and tape recorder revealed that in 1958, the Air Force captured an alien when it had crash-landed. They experimented on the alien while withholding its spacecraft composed of strange white cubes, which allowed the craft to shapeshift. The alien had established a psychic connection with Woodward, convincing him to help it escape Earth, but Nellick sabotaged, discredited it, and discharged Woodward. I do remember that, because I covered this film on my blog back when I watched it. I couldn't find the posting. I must have deleted it. But I believe that the white cubes were shaped into a larger white cube, which is interesting because Tracy Twyman talked about how the end of the world happens when a white cube and a black cube meet on a vertical axis. Right? The dual polarities meet up. And this is kind of similar to what we're going to talk about in Wizard of Oz Part 3 with the good witches being on the north-south vertical axis as opposed to the evil witches being on the east-west axis, the horizontal axis. Because the material world is considered evil to these folks. And ascension and descension of consciousness is the good part. We're going to talk about it in Wizard of Oz Part 3. But for now, let's switch gears. Let's bring out the man, the myth, the legend, Nick Hinton. Take a listen. All right. We are humbled to have the great Nick Hinton returning to the show, returning to provide some interesting insight into what's going on in the world today, a little mix of UFOs with the train wreck. The train wreck.
Yeah.
And so on. Nick, what's up, man?
What's up, man? Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, definitely. You were a big hit on the last one, and we definitely crossed similar research paths. So I wanted to get your take, because you always have these hot, interesting takes. I'm not sure where you want to start, but when we were talking about this stuff offline, we were talking about the toxic spills, and you know, there's this movie Super 8. Have you seen it?
I have not seen it, but someone sent it to me. And, yeah, it just seems to be very synchronistically tied with the events that are going on right now.
Yeah.
That movie and, White Noise. So White Noise is basically about a train crash in East Palestine, Ohio, that causes a chemical spill and an explosion and all these things. People are put in quarantine camps, forced to leave home. And one of the interesting things about that movie is one of the themes in it is simulacrum, which are, it's basically a more fancy philosophical version of simulation theory. That's the best way I've learned to explain it.
Okay.
But anyways, yeah. So someone sent me this movie, White Noise, and another person sent me this movie, Super 8. Super 8's kind of about the same thing. It's about a train crash in Ohio. Chemical spill, explosion, but an alien escapes from this train. And interestingly enough, in White Noise, there's also UFO references, but not like super obviously. It's like there's a song in there where it sings about UFOs and the government knowing more than they're telling people and just some weird stuff.
Have you seen the movie White Noise?
I haven't seen any of these movies. I tried the plot synopsis.
I tried to watch White Noise because I actually saw the trailer when they first debuted it. I thought it looked interesting, and I made it about a half hour and just gave up because it's kind of like the Wes Anderson movies, which some people love them. It's just not for me. My best friend loves Wes Anderson. I think it's pretentious crap, but I just couldn't do it. And then now we got this train thing. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to give it a second shot. But it is interesting how it has this toxic train spill and it initiates a sequence of events and so on.
And so the interesting thing, you know, like I said, it's about, there's this theme in there of like simulacrum and simulation.
That's in the movie White Noise.
That's in White Noise. We shouldn't have talked about both movies at the same time. But in White Noise, there's like this barn that plays an important role, and it's like the most photographed barn in the world or something like that. And so everyone wants to go to this barn, and this deals with the theory of like the original book. White Noise was a kind of like a postmodern work, and so it dealt with a lot of these themes. And the barn, because it is the most photographed barn in the world, it becomes like something more than it actually is. It becomes like this theme park almost. Like there's this aura of mystery around it, and there's all these signs leading up to it. And, you know, to imagine what a simulacrum is, like kind of imagine like Disney World or something like that, where it's like this fake world that's kind of based on unreality to begin with. Like there's all these fake representations of Mickey Mouse and Magic Mountain and stuff like that. Like those are representations, but they don't represent anything real. Right. And so some philosophers have compared all of society to a simulacrum or a spectacle, postmodern philosophers. But anyways, this idea is super interesting to me because the film was shot in East Palestine, Ohio. It's about East Palestine, Ohio. And there's a CNN article floating around right now that's like, oh, these locals are now living inside of a movie they helped create. It's like these layers of inception, and you know, it's a fiction, it's a true fiction, it's a hyper reality. You get what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
this, they're living in the simulacrum that they made a movie about.
Yeah, it's just so. The Jordan Peele film Nope about UFOs. I'm not going to spoil the plot or nothing, but that seemed to me when I watched it, because I've been looking at the UFO phenomenon from this angle of film entertainment, predictive programming, and you know, similar stuff to what you're always researching and talking about. It's the powers of the mind and how the powers that be through MK Ultra and so on have tried to find a way of, through occult practices, I believe, to
cross it's chaos
this
magic.
Bridge. Yeah, through chaos magic, cross
breaking
this bridge
the fourth wall.
Hermetic axiom type stuff, right? And in Nope, I think Jordan Peele was trying to present this idea of through focused thought patterns, basically, they can manifest whatever they want. They can create their own reality. And that's interesting that East Palestine, where the train wreck happened, you said it was filmed either there or with some supporting actors from there.
It was
like
literally
that?
Filmed in the same place that the movie takes place.
Oh, that's bizarre.
And the locals were used as backdrop actors.
That's bizarre.
Yeah. And so this idea of like simulacrum or, you know, simulations and mirror worlds and inception, things like that reminded me of the sentient world simulation, which is a quantum mirror model of the world that the DoD is working on with Purdue University. And they're also trying to create like 7 billion digital doppelgangers of everyone on this planet. Like everyone has their own virtual voodoo doll or, you know, avatar, basically, that is created using all the data that we are mining on a daily basis through the Internet of Things and like your preferences, your likes on Instagram, all these things that we've downloaded for free, right? Google Maps, whatever.
That's fascinating because I remember reading about this sentient, I think it was in 2020. I don't know how old this is, right? But I recall maybe reading about this in 2020, this idea.
Yeah, so the 2021 was when the World Economic Forum actually like started talking about it.
Okay.
And made it not so secret, but it's been around since like 2008 or 2009.
Interesting. Okay, so I got something to bounce off you here. Have you seen Jordan Peele's what's the other film he did three big films?
Get Out?
I guess Get Out would fit into it too. No, but Us, the other one with the doppelgangers.
I haven't seen it.
Okay, so that plot line is basically an as above, so below sort of thing, where underground they have people, these doppelgangers, living more or less parallel lives or something to that effect. It's been a while since I've seen it. So that sounds very eerily similar to the sentient world simulation, where maybe they're trying to do a so below kind of version of reality. And then simultaneously, just today, I was reading, I live in Utah, right? So the local news here, the politicians are trying to pass legislation that would require anyone who uses social media to have some kind of identity verification.
Oh yeah, the digital ID.
And that would fit into this because that was what I was complaining to my wife about. I said, this is BS because, you know, this is, and it's the same BS I call out on when they required the ID check in for Pornhub in Kentucky or wherever they did that. It's them profiling and sort of refining this data set to, you know, more or less try to create this maybe sentient world simulation version of us. So these more accurate avatars that, to me, this digital matrix thing is definitely one of the end games. Do you think that there's a something related to white noise, the sentient world simulation,
yeah,
the train wrecks going on?
Yeah, so my mind was brought to the sentient world simulation because, you know, the White Noise movie had the theme of simulacrum in it, you know, hints about UFOs. And then, you know, it's kind of synchronistically tied to Super 8 because, again, it's about this train derailment, chemical explosion in Ohio. Alien escapes from the train. It, you know, it's interesting you brought up, did you say Us was the one about the parallel lives underground?
Yes.
Yeah, so this alien escapes the train, and sorry, this is kind of a spoiler. I'm not going to give too much away, but it's more about the symbolism. This alien escapes underground into this tunnel system, and it steals all of these electronic devices from the town, and it starts kidnapping people as well. And so when they go underground, they see all these people in cocoons hanging from the cave, and it's also creating this like AI hive mind thing with all the electronics that it's stolen.
Are you talking about the film Super 8?
Yes, this is Super 8 now.
Yeah, I actually watched that in the theaters when it came out, but this was, you know, early stage red pill Isaac. So, I mean, this is probably, I think it came out like 2011 or 2012 or something.
Yeah. It's pretty old.
Fascinating.
But, yeah. So that also, you know, that imagery reminded me of the AI hive mind, because what people think that the sentient world simulation is trying to do is actually quantumly entangle the avatar with the real person, kind of link you up with the digital doppelganger. So it's kind of like the invasion of the body snatchers, right? Where people won't be actual clones are actually replaced with a new person, but their minds will be replaced with the mind of the AI controlled consciousness within the simulation. There's technology now that we're aware of where they can deliver paramagnetic nanoparticles through mRNA vaccines that can control neurons through magnetic fields being emitted from even cell phone towers. This is all documented. This is all real. There's lots of ways they can do this, actually, through blue light. Even they can stimulate neuronal control. And so, like I said, the theory is that what they're trying to do is literally create an AI hive mind by merging people with their avatar within the sentient world simulation.
Have you seen the Ray Kurzweil nanobots that they're talking about putting into people's bodies to
create an augmented reality? Yeah, beaming radio waves at neurons.
Is that kind of similar to the idea that you're talking about here with the mRNA stuff?
Yeah. So these nanoparticles, there's a whole bunch of different ways they figured out how to do this. Like, yeah, so Ray Kurzweil was talking about people just breathing them in the air because, you know, supposedly it's in chemtrails. That's kind of a conspiracy. But what we do know for a fact is that scientists are saying, hey, we created smart dust, which is like these super tiny supercomputers that emit radio waves. So, I mean, it's kind of like the groundwork for something like Skynet. But also it's a transhumanist technology. Like they're, you know, this is the kingdom of iron and clay that the Bible talks about, right? At the end of time, where it's an unstable kingdom because iron and clay do not mix correctly. But a lot of, you know, end time scholars say that this is representative of a transhumanist society, which is interesting because in White Noise, after everyone's quarantined, they're relocated to a city called Iron City. And it's also interesting that this happened in East Palestine because Palestine is the Holy Land. Well, what is the Holy Land? It's the temple of God. The temple of God is the body, and people's bodies are being invaded right now. Not only through toxins, but through this push for transhumanist technology.
That's interesting. And even in the Epic of Gilgamesh, the Mesopotamian creation myth, they talk about transhumanistic ideas too. So there's something to that. You know, I can't help but think there's some kind of spiritual battle happening. And I thought I had a realization the other day about this idea, because I'm oftentimes, when I read about the occult philosophies and ideas, sometimes I sit here and I think, man, I don't know that that's wrong necessarily. Like I kind of have this role of more or less exposing these occult teachings in entertainment or whatever. And I've got a background as a Orthodox Christian, so there I've got a bias there, right? But sometimes when I read these occult practices, I think, man, I don't think it's all that much different than some of our Christian practices, and I also don't think some of this is necessarily evil or wrong. So I had a thought about that Hermetic axiom, as above, so below, which, you know, basically says things out there in the cosmos in the macro kind of reflect, mirror, and resonate with things down here in the micro, meaning. And you already know the stuff I'm telling for the audience, but the idea that I, as an if I'm an occultist magician, I can sort of focus my energies to have the universe rearrange itself and provide a path towards what I want to happen is kind of the idea. And I think using that same logic, we could argue that we are in fact having a spiritual battle on some level. When you think about the concept on the micro of a person, I think I have some good and some evil in me. I could easily do either thing depending on my mood or my influence or whatever. And I think that same concept, if you want to take it to as above, so below, would go out to the cosmos, out to the universe, where there's a struggle there between good and evil. And I think we're seeing manifestations of it. You know, I don't want to get too end times, but it sure seems like there's manifestations of a battle between good and evil, and sort of letting humanity decide how they want to move forward with things.
Yeah, 100%. But part of me wonders if, you know, there's very obvious examples of how as above, so below, like, works in nature and stuff. But I sometimes think that maybe the occult worldview is kind of being forced on us, and they're trying to actually create it and make it true through their hyper reality simulacrums, chaos magic, things like that. Like this sentient world simulation, this mirror world, that literally is like the samsara that they believe in, right? And so they are kind of initiating
Is samsara, is that like the Buddhist word for heaven or something like that?
Yeah, that's like the dreamlike realm, the wheel of reincarnation, okay. the illusion of reality.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I've heard it like Maya in Buddhism. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So it seems like they're initiating us into that fake world. And like a lot of these events, you know, even the train derailments and the UFOs, like it seems like mostly everyone, you know, it doesn't take a genius to see that these things are suspect, right? It's almost as if they're being presented to us in such a way that they're obviously fake, obviously orchestrated. Like they're real events, but there's a layer of fakeness to it. Like there's that inception. And so if the sentient world simulation is up and running and it's studying us, it's almost as if we're kind of like rats in a maze being studied and playing this, you know, conspiracy themed alternate reality game. And to explain what an alternate reality game is, just real quick, it's kind of like my favorite way of explaining it is imagine you're walking down the street and you find this poster, this strange poster on the ground. And it says like, are you having strange dreams? Or do you think you're special? Blah, blah, blah. Do you have some kind of destiny? Like this has actually happened before, but now imagine you call the number on this strange poster and some kind of, you know, crazy Easter egg hunt ensues, right? Except what you don't know is that the whole thing was an elaborate prank played on you by social scientists and some rich guy. So it was real to you, but fake in a way. right?
Interesting. Okay.
And so I think that's what's kind of happening right now through the metaverse, right? Like, we're all living vicariously through these events that are presented in a way that's very obviously suspect in the internet. We're watching these events take place. We're going down the rabbit hole, being initiated into that lab, that psychological labyrinth, right? That is created through conspiracy theories. And we're all trying to uncover the truth of these things while at the same time, we are just mining data in that digital cave for our digital avatars, our digital doppelgangers, whatever.
Does that, are you thinking that
this is like a social experiment, in my opinion?
Do you think that as a if I were to put on my conspiracy theorist truther hat, you think that I'm sort of people like me or whatever are contributing to their plans in some way by talking about these things, you think?
Yeah, I think we all kind of are. And it's not on purpose. Like, we all have good intentions, right?
Right, right.
But the fact that this is all becoming so mainstream is very suspect to me. And it seems almost like it's right out of the movie Divergent or Maze Runner, right? Where they take like the smartest people and they put them through these tests and trials and, you know, to create their enlightened utopia. Like, the vision for Crowley's, like his end goal was not like this dystopian, fascist, dark satanic world. It was like an enlightened utopia ruled by ascended masters.
Yes.
And it feels like we're going through the deep dark labyrinth so we can find the light at the end of the tunnel, but that's by design, in my opinion.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I've often wondered if we're participating in the revelation of the method where they know that the authority figures can't come out and say, hey, here's what you should believe. It's maybe that they're sprinkling these ideas into entertainment and having people like me be like, hey, look at this, you know.
Yeah. So what happens when you decrypt something? You activate the code. We are almost becoming agents of revelation itself, right? Like, we are the people that are kind of tearing down the veil in a way.
Interesting. Okay. Like maybe for years they've been pushing these messages and these symbols and these ideas, but now with the internet and the different, I don't know, information age, we can, now we're actually more or less participating by explaining how all of these systems work, and they could be using this to somehow fuel their, like you said, you know, all those occultists, Crowley and Francis Bacon and all these folks, they all wrote about this fantasy world that they wanted to create of, you know, the technocratic society or science, and you know, like you said, the ascended masters and things.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think there's something to that. I don't know how to sort of move forward with that. I don't know that it necessarily changes anything for me, but
have you read Talon by Jorge Luis Borges?
No.
So it's literally about a group of writers within the Illuminati. And at first they are like, hey, you know, they're all having a meeting and they're like, hey, we should create our own country. And eventually they're like, nah, that's too humble. Like, we should create our own universe. And so the way they create their own universe is by writing the series of encyclopedias with totally fake histories, but they present them as real to people. And then that imaginary reality begins to leak into the real world and overtake it slowly, kind of like a virus, right?
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Isn't that the guy who did Morning of the Magicians that the ancient alien theory was based on? You ever heard of that?
I'm not sure. No, I haven't heard of that. I know he did Library of Babel.
What's the guy's name again? I'll type it up while you're talking.
Jorge Luis Borges.
Oh, maybe that's a different name. Anyway, okay.
But yeah, so like back, so just to finish my thought on like the whole decrypting thing and like activating the code, activating revelation, it's like, it just reminds me of like the seeker in many movies who goes looking for some lost hidden treasure and then accidentally opens a sarcophagus and releases a curse, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like that seems to, we're being prodded into opening Pandora's box in a sense.
Oh wow, man! Okay, that's all right.
Yeah,
you mentioned on our text messages something about Babylon working, like, you know, the ritual. Yeah, Jack Parsons did.
Yeah, so I feel like a lot of what's going on right now is kind of a version of that. The initiation into the mystery Babylon religion spoken of in Book of Revelation. Because, like I said, I think that what's going on right now, like the reason for these limited hangouts, this dripped information, you know, the powers that be exposing themselves, I think it's all being done on purpose. It's kind of being orchestrated. It's like a controlled demolition, right, of the old system. So like they're exposing their scapegoats, right, so they can sacrifice them and bring in the actual New World Order, right? So they're showing us the World Economic Forum. They're showing us Klaus Schwab dressed up like a supervillain because it's all meant to be obvious. They want there to be these Gnostic revolutionaries who are pissed off and want to take down the old system. So when the real thing comes, they'll think, oh, the good guys won, you know? Mm. And so like, in a sense, this is a Babylon working, like what's going on right now with the Black Cube cell phone, right? Like it's a direct portal into the World Wide Web. Well, that was created at CERN, which many people on your show probably already know that's a portal into the abyss, whether that's literal or metaphorical, I don't know. But if we are literally going down the rabbit hole or going into the abyss every time we enter that psychological labyrinth of research and conspiracy theory, in these rituals of initiation, what happens at the very bottom of the abyss is that the adept unites with the divine feminine and becomes spiritually reborn. Well, the divine feminine is represented by, you know, Babylon and all these other goddesses, such as Artemis. Artemis, you could kind of compare her to a goddess of cloning. She's covered in egg sacs, right? And so I wonder if by going into the abyss that we are actually being spiritually reborn in a false way, because we are actually merging with our digital clone or feeding it in some way.
Oh, wow, man. Yeah, and that's very much like the Joseph Campbell's hero's journey, right?
When exactly, which is based off the Orphic mysteries.
Wow, okay. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and that's what conspiracy culture is. You go into the abyss, you kind of lose your mind a little bit, you come back with the mystery of the gods, and then when you come back up to the realm of the mortals, you reveal the mysteries of the gods. And at least in the myths, you know, Orpheus gets his head cut off. Well, what happened to JFK, the person who basically facilitated the term conspiracy theory, right? He talked about conspiracies, got his head blown off. And then he became a kind of white rabbit to follow into that realm, right? He became another gatekeeper. It, you know, so like the whole point of like seeking the mystery, is to become mortal, right? Like that's what the alchemists are looking for, the elixir of life. Well, in a sense, you do become immortal when you figure out the mystery, right? Like JFK was immortalized, and many famous researchers who have gone too deep, they've also become immortalized in the sense that the conspiracy theorists became the conspiracy. And because they became the conspiracy, they're another white rabbit to chase into the abyss and try and figure out their death, figure out what happened to them. And then you end up exactly where they were. The fool's journey always ends on the altar if you take it too far.
What do you mean, like the altar of sacrifice?
Yes.
Because I think when we're talking about, if you want to go to the Orphic mystery hero's journey sort of aspect, if I'm the conspiracy theorist and I go searching in the dark, which is actually an interesting metaphor, because I've heard that almost identical phrase a lot of people who in my personal life I tell them about this stuff, and I always get this reaction of like, how do you do that all day? Like, how's that you're always looking at this dark stuff? And I'm like, I don't know, it doesn't feel dark to me, it just seems like, but I watch a lot of horror movies and crap, so I'm desensitized, but a lot of people view it as a really dark realm, and I get it, right? Like there are some dark aspects, but in the hero's journey, the conspiracy theorist slash hero would go into the abyss, face the darkness, and come back with the boons. And that's, you know, the conspiracy theorists. We say, hey, we found these symbols or whatever. And then we come back to the real world and tell everyone, hey, I've got this knowledge to bestow upon you. And in the hero's journey, it creates a new world. And it does seem like maybe this could be all part of the plan.
Well, that's the point of initiation, is to change your perception of the world. Once you're initiated, the world no longer it's not the same place anymore. It is the Truman Show. It's the Matrix. It's Westworld, right? Like you become open to their language. You speak their language now, and now you're living in Wonderland, the synchronistic, you know, labyrinth, Chapel Perilous.
Fascinating. Man, you're always bringing some kind of interesting philosophy into this. You're always making me think, dude. I do want to, I do know you got to get going. So, Man, there's a lot to think about. I'm going to have to kick this around on the weekend in my brain what you're saying here. Is there any I know the audience, last time I had you on, a lot of people were like, "Man, where can I find Nick?" You know, where's the best place they can make contact with you, and where, I know you're working on a new book. Can you get us an update on the book or where people can maybe pre-order it?
Yeah, so I am going to update my Ko-Fi link today before this is out. I'll have a pre-order link on there, and that's in the bio of my Twitter and Instagram, which are both NickHintonn.
Okay. So Nick Hinton with two N's on Instagram and Twitter. I will put this stuff in the show notes. And then you said a Ko-Fi link. I'm too stupid. What's Ko-Fi mean?
Ko-Fi is just like a website that automates selling stuff for you, I guess. I was doing it through DMs before, but it's just become kind of too difficult to do.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine that. All right. Well, okay, I'll get links from you, and I'll post your socials on the show notes so everyone can find you and check out your you know, all your work, man. You've done a lot of good stuff. You've written, I got all your books so far, so keep it coming, man.
Yeah, thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Graham, for joining us. Appreciate it. All right, there you go. And again, links are going to be in the show notes for all of Nick's stuff. Check him out. Support him. Now back to me. Back to me. All right. Let's go back to the rational world. I'm not saying like all this occult talk is irrational. I'm just saying mundane. There you go. That's a better term. Let's come back to the mundane world. If you go to thelever.com, which is a website for train nerds, they have this article about how Norfolk Southern, the train company that got derailed, basically was part of a train lobbyist group, and they worked with Republicans to fight against the federal safety mandating of brake safety system that President Obama was trying to implement way back when. And the claim, of course, these industrial lobbyists always say is, well, you know, the big bad government, if you mandate these safety systems, who's going to pay for it? It's going to be so expensive. And that's Big Brother telling me what to do, and that's bad for business. Well, the claim being made, and this isn't by me, this is by train nerds, is that if those safety systems, the braking systems that they wanted to mandate would have went through, this incident wouldn't have happened. That's the claim. Because over 10 years ago, there was actually a trend of derailments. And they were hauling toxic chemicals back then, too. In fact, this exact crash happened in New Jersey in 2012. Look it up, near Minuta Creek, near Philly. So the lobbyists fight to water down this requirement back in 2014, and then Trump gets in, and they abolish it completely. All right. I'm going to read you from levernews.com. Then came 2017, after rail industry donors delivered more than $6 million to GOP campaigns, the Trump administration, backed by rail lobbyists and Senate Republicans, rescinded part of that rule aimed at making better braking systems widespread on the nation's rails. Specifically, regulators killed provisions requiring rail cars carrying hazardous flammable materials to be equipped with electronic braking systems to stop trains more quickly than conventional air brakes. Norfolk Southern had previously touted the new technology, ironic, isn't it, known as electronically controlled pneumatic ECP brakes, for its potential to reduce train stopping distances by as much as 60% over conventional air brakes. But the company's lobby group nonetheless pressed for the rule's repeal, telling regulators that it would impose tremendous cost without providing offsetting safety benefits. Now, the problem they had with it was they didn't want it federally mandated for all trains. Now, this is my speculation. I think they invented it and they wanted to boast that, hey, we're the best train because we have this brake system. But then if you make everybody have it, then all that research and, you know, R&D that went into it is kind of like, well, that's nothing to brag about now, right? So in a way, like, I get it, right? You spend all this money to develop this system, and then the government just says, oh, okay, yeah, everyone should do that. Well, like, financially, they're probably like, well, no. But that's the same argument you could apply to Big Pharma, Right? So if they're the ultimate evil too, then, you know, anyway. Well, I'll get on my soapbox here in about 1 second. Hang on. But the claim they posted on the website was that it cost too much for the company to outfit all the trains with this brake system. They didn't like that. Meanwhile, and the article points out that meanwhile, Norfolk was paying millions of dollars to executives and billions on stock buybacks, and all the while laying off thousands of employees. And if you recall, several months ago, there was this strike by rail workers because I guess they weren't given enough sick leave or something like that. A whole mess, right? Now, here's where we get into my political soapbox. Because what's wild to me is that there's several articles online about Republican right-wing outfits blaming the left-wing Democrats, Biden, Buttigieg. They're now blaming them for not having pushed for the safety reform because, you know, the Democrats have been in the office the last couple of years, and they're like, well, why didn't you knew this was a problem. Why didn't you make it happen? When the truth is that Obama and Biden back then were trying to make it happen, and these same Republicans were fighting against it. So, you know, probably just more divisive talk. But I've read through several articles, like Harvard and Columbia Law Schools reported via New York Times, that Trump rolled back over 100 environmental protections while he was in office. And this is no surprise, right? Like, Republicans say this all the time. They say they're going to do it. And he did it. And, you know, the president has the power to install the administrative offices for places and offices like the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency. And Trump's people in the EPA stripped tons of Obama-era environmental rules, you know, trying to, with goals like reducing carbon dioxide, protecting wetlands, mercury emissions from power plants, train brake safety requirements, and so on, right? And Trump's people in the Interior Department opened up oil and gas leasing by limiting, which is probably why gas was so cheap, I guess. I don't know. But the Trump's Interior Department opened up oil and gas leasing. And to do that, they limited wildlife protections and environmental requirements. And I was a program manager for several years, so I know exactly what they're talking about. When you have a project, you need to conduct these environmental impact studies, right? So if that local area where you're trying to, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a good example off the top of my head. You want to build a Taco Bell in the middle of the desert. I don't know. There's an environmental impact study that says, well, you know, are there native species there that are endangered and you're going to displace them from their home of animals? Or, you know, what happens to all your wastewater? Where does that go? Things like that, right? Which, I mean, should happen. But the claim that the right wing and the Republicans will say is that these are cumbersome rules to business. And, you know, to be fair, if you watch Bill Maher, he talked about how in California, they sort of embody what it looks like when there's too many regulations and bureaucratic red tape, according to Bill Maher, because he was saying he's trying to build a solar panel energy generation station in his backyard or something. And it took an obscene amount, 10 years or something nuts, to get all these permits and requirements. So, I mean, there's a rational balance to be had here, I would argue. But, you know, all these things, you know, trying to protect animals and the environment, I'm sorry, but those are good things. We should try to do that. I mean, based upon, even if you want to base it upon every villain you've seen in every movie, right? But the result of letting free market capitalism go unchecked because it's too cumbersome to see what the results of this business are going to be, regardless of whether you believe in it or not, are going to result in more pollution, dirtier air, which, you know, I live in Utah and this is right wing heaven out here. And we've got some of the dirtiest air on the planet. some days. It's a nightmare. But the government tells the commuters, like, hey, you should try carpool today. Meanwhile, 60% of the pollution is done by businesses. There's a massive oil refinery in Salt Lake just spewing out stuff. The government will not check that. They're like, no, we can't prohibit business, but we can tell the taxpayers who live here to limit their production of them driving their vehicles or the wood burning stoves and that kind of thing. So, you know, it's just funny to me how people are okay with government overreach when it applies to things that they support, right? But yeah, I mean, when you strip out any consideration for the environment, you're going to get dirtier air, you're going to get dead animals, endangered species, that kind of thing, more toxic train wrecks. And it reminds me, I just actually watched Idiocracy again because I'm doing a film analysis for Idiocracy. I don't know how I'm going to release that. Bonus episode in March, I'm not sure yet. But you see garbage heaps and cars wrecked everywhere. And I mean, it's arguable that that's where we're headed, right? Look at Flint, Michigan. Flint, Michigan, and now Palestine, Ohio. They can't drink the water. They got to drink bottled water. Like, that's wild. That's wild that we are okay with that kind of behavior. And it's more dangerous. Trump had apparently allowed this transportation via railroad of this highly explosive liquid natural gas that was apparently a big to-do while he was in. I didn't follow this. Biden gets in office and he immediately halts that. Well, I mean, apply this derailment thing to this highly explosive liquid natural gas, and I mean, I don't know. But what's curious is that the Republican governor of Ohio, Mike DeWine, is out here saying, oh, there's no problems at all, fake news, left and right, everything's cool. And then President Biden apparently offered some kind of assistance, but Governor DeWine's like, no, man, there's no problems here. Everything's great. This is great. And at the same time, the senator from Ohio, J.D. Vance, was whining about how there's no federal assistance to deal with the wreck. And that's my beef, right? Republicans are like, hey, we need limited small government. And whenever a Republican president like Trump gets in, they just gut the shit out of every government bureaucracy and program. Just cut it to nothing. Because they're like, no, we need a small, limited government. And I'm not saying there's not an argument to be had for that. I agree, right? On some levels. But then when something like this happens and they're like, give me some federal assistance, it's like, well, then they got their hands out waiting for the socialism. Then it's okay. Then the socialism's okay. And you could apply this argument to many national disasters anyway. The irony here is that the county where Palestine in Ohio is in is, when you look it up, it's categorized as a very Republican county. They voted for Trump and all that stuff, right? And now they're filing lawsuits against the railway, Norfolk Southern. And the irony is that the guy that they voted in was arguably responsible for this whole thing. And now they want to blame the railroads, when really they could have apparently had some legislation that would have helped them. And I don't know. This is the type of stuff that just pisses me off. Because I watch the foods that I put in my body, because you constantly have to be up to date on the chemicals they're using and what the definition of the labels are and what's the difference between organic and certified organic and free range and pasture raised. Like, you got to constantly stay ahead of these insane old corporations that constantly are trying to manipulate you, right? I don't know if you've ever heard of how there's other countries out there that ban a lot of the chemicals they put in our food in America. And it's insane to me. Like the nonstick PFAS on the pans, right? I specifically go out of my way to cook with non-PFAS and various other chemicals, that the nonstick stuff, right? Well, that PFAS, now they're apparently spraying it all over this town in Ohio to suppress the other chemical problems or whatever. So if I lived there, I'd be pretty upset about it. Because, you know, you trying to stay healthy is difficult when you live in a toxic environment. anyway, that's my soapbox. Thank you for listening to my soapbox. And look, I'm not saying like, oh, Joe Biden's great, communism's great. I'm just saying you can't have unchecked free market capitalism, and you got to protect the environment. You got to care. You got to care. Like Charles Manson said, the animal, trees, water, and air. You got to. You just have to. And you can't trust corporations to do the right thing. You just can't. And that's what's funny. It's like people say that the free market capitalist Western democracy system here that we have is the greatest thing ever. And there's a good argument for that. You know, I'm not saying communist Soviet Union was great. That looked pretty bad. But you got to have a balance there is all I'm saying. And you just, the free market capitalist system, because here's the facts of the matter. Human beings are selfish, and that's why capitalism is actually really good, because it best fits our behavior as a species. But you have to check the corporation, because the corporation has no consciousness, right? They call incorporated the corporation to corporeal, to create a sort of entity. It's an entity without a conscious, and it requires us, tax-paying citizens, to pay attention and to try to keep these people in check. But that's why the mainstream media is quiet about this. All these conspiracy theorists are going nuts about it. Why aren't they talking about it? It's because left-wing and right-wing news media, they have their hands in the pockets of these lobbyists and crap. They all get paid. They're all getting paid by Big Pharma, you know? These lobbyists are a real mess. And that's actually when President Obama ran, I actually liked what he was saying, because he was up the lobbyist ass talking about, oh, we're not going to have any lobbyists here. And I was like, good. And then he immediately did not do that. So whatever. So USA Today, they published an article on February 9th, 6 days after the wreck, talking about how these trains get wrecked sometimes. Listen to this. If this isn't confusing, I don't know what is. It says, the Association of American Railroads, an industry trade group, noted in an emailed statement to USA Today that 99.9% of all hazmat shipments reach their destination without incident, and that the hazmat accident rate has actually declined 55% since 2012. Hey, that's a pretty good number. 99.9% without incident. Sounds good, right? But then, in the same article, not a sentence later, it says, in the last decade, however, right? Hazardous materials have spilled or leaked from trains more than 5,000 times in the United States, according to a USA Today study analysis of federal incident reports. That doesn't sound like 99.9%, or maybe that is. Maybe that's 0.1% of the total. I mean, what's the math on that? I don't even know. 5 million train routes a year? I don't know. Maybe that's accurate. But that's a lot. 5,000 times. If you do the math on that, that's about 500 hazardous materials leaked a year. That's 41 a month. That's about one a day. Right? And one a day would make sense, because you'll notice ever since this incident, now there's constant breaking news alert, new toxic chemical spill from a train, and everyone is like, whoa, wait a minute, what? It's because the news is good at focusing the attention on matter. Like, for instance, in 2020, we had the Black Lives Matter movement, right? It seemed like every day we're getting another video of a cop killing an unarmed black person. Do you think that went away? Probably not. It's probably still happening at the same rate. They just decided to change the narrative on what's going on in the world. And to be fair, maybe there's like not enough time in the day to report all this stuff. Who knows? Let me keep reading here. It says, however, other forms of transit notched even further, far more spills. For every rail leak reported last year, there were two involving planes and 67 on the highways. So they're saying that the rails are actually kind of the safest transport method. Because I get it, right? I'm just saying there's problems with free market capitalism. I'm not saying it's the worst thing ever by any stretch. Same goes for the argument on opening, when Trump opened up the oil, gas and oil leases. Like, look, I drive a car with gas, so there's blood on my hands too. I get it, right? I'm not like, that's the problem with a lot of the modern day liberals. I'm more of a classical 90s liberal or whatever. I was too young to know what politics were back then, but I don't think I'm holier than thou, right? I do recognize that we have to figure something out, but I'm not the type to just bury my head in the sand and be like, no, it's totally fine. Let's just let the companies do whatever they want to do. Like, I don't know what the answer is, but I don't know how you're supposed to believe these corporations to do the right thing. Like, they always lie. That's my beef. That's my beef with corporate America. That's my beef with this idea of unchecked free market capitalism. I like free market capitalism, but I like it checked. That's all I'm saying. So in conclusion, before I get back on my soapbox, in conclusion, two ideas to sum up what's going on here. We've got this mundane, worldly, political angle that's frustrating and it's irritating. And to me, I think this is why you can't go black pill. This is why you have to stay politically engaged on some level. You know what I mean? I'm not ready to give up on America yet. I'm not ready yet. Even though, I'm the first one to say it. It feels like Coke and Pepsi. They say two wings of the same bird, and that's what it feels like sometimes. It's like, man, neither one of these guys are doing us any favors. They're just getting the rich richer and destroying our whole planet in the process and bankrupting the morality of the world while they do it. And there's not a real choice. That's what it feels like a lot of the times. And I'm not ready to give up completely because apathy is what they want. They want you to just... That's why you'll notice, and I haven't done a formal analysis on this. I don't know, but there's a lot of, if you look at it from the idea of political enemies or whatever, you got America, and then you got everyone else trying to take down America. The big ones are Russia and China, right? Those are the enemies of America. And of course, I'm not talking about the people. People are probably cool, right? Like, no one cares. Like, people in Russia and China probably look up to America, pop culture, whatever. They probably love us. But the governments do not, right? You got these autocratic, fascist dictator types. And they would love nothing more than to infiltrate movements within America. And they see that the conspiracy theorist community are the ones talking bad about the government and talking about how bankrupt the morals of America are, right? I'm guilty too, right? I do that too. So in a way, they probably love it. That's why RT, the Russia Times, propaganda news outlet, the state-run media of Russia, like, they're peddling conspiracy theories sometimes. And we did the two shows on the Russia dark arts like 6 months ago. And in the summer of 2020, I interviewed Professor Ben Teitelbaum about traditionalism and how Steve Bannon and Russia were in bed together with this fantasy of this going back to this like nonsensical world they believed exists. But anyway, I think that you have to be careful, is all I'm trying to say. There's these psychopaths out there. They want this fascist theocracy, autocratic, free market sort of cesspool where the elites destroy all of our lives and the environment to fuel their greed and power. That's one thing, right? Then on the other, you got the spirit triangle, which, you know, thank you, Nick Hinton, for coming on the show and sharing your perspective on it. And the question is, are we as conspiracy theorists or truthers somehow assisting in this revelation of the method process? And do the powers that be want that? Are people like Elon Musk telling us, hey, there's a simulation theory and we live in a simulation, which is a Gnostic idea. We've talked about this many times. When in reality, the truth is they are trying to create a digital matrix. They're trying to create an actual simulation world. And maybe the revelation of the method of this ancient Gnostic occult idea belief system, they want us to perpetuate that or plant the seed or to make people aware of this so that they can, I don't know, in one way or another, manipulate us into their digital matrix. They can say, look, see, you're already living in a simulation. Come join this one because this one's better. Right? They want to take you from God's creation and into their creation. And that's what Satanism is all about, the worship of the self. The Luciferianism is about the worship of the intellect, the wisdom of man. And this is the age-old story, like the Tower of Babel, right? Man trying to reach the height of God through focus of the self, the will of the self. Do what thou wilt, what Aleister Crowley said. So there you go. We went all over the place with this one today. But some different perspectives on this train derailment. And again, thanks to Nick Hinton for joining us again. I've got links to his stuff in the show notes. Follow him on the social medias. Pre-order his book. I already did. I already pre-ordered mine. And, you know, be sure to, I don't know. Look, I already know that a lot of people listening probably don't share similar political views, and that's okay. It's fine. Like, we don't have to agree on that. That's the beauty of this country. That's the beauty of it. We disagree. And we do it in a peaceful manner. And we respect each other. That's the way it's supposed to be. It seems like in the last 10 years, things are going off the rails the other way. But, you know, let's try to keep love in our hearts for one another. I'm just saying, like, let's just try to protect the environment. That's all I'm trying to say. Protect the animals. Protect the environment. Try not to let this kind of stuff happen as much as we can. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. Until next time, stay woke.